From the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network, it's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. All over the Great Lakes State via the Michigan Talk Network. All over the world from our website, wildmichiganradio.com. You can pick up the podcast there, which I've updated. The people have spoken. I've listened. Sorry, it's been a whirlwind trip this year. Brought to you by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral. You can get your Lucky Buck out now, but find out the right way to do it. Go to lucky-buck.com. And we've been using it for a while. We're on a bit of a hiatus with using it in one particular area where we hunt because we fall in the Ingham, Clinton, and Shiawassee County triangle where CWD was found in Ingham County. So we're moving to other locations to use our Lucky Buck. And we'll have some photos of that. And if you've got photos, by all means, send them to me via our website. Get on the contact page, and we would love to post your stuff on our Facebook page or on Twitter and share what you're seeing with Lucky Buck. Also, Costa Sunglasses, HHA Sports, Single Pin Archery Technology, the best by far, and MUCC helping us here with the show as well. Going to go to the news pages of the Michigan Outdoor News. Editor Bill Parker joins us in this hour of the show. Bill, so many things going on in Michigan alone. I've seen them everywhere else, but I've had almost no time to do anything here in Michigan. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you, Duran?
Doing well, because I think we've slowed down for a very short time.
Yeah, you've been on the move this summer and spring.
It's been crazy. It's been crazy, but a good kind of crazy. But,
oh, boy, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, but you're diligently putting out the news. You just made deadline this week for the next paper, and I'm going to get the scoop. I want to find out what is in the next issue of Michigan Outdoor News.
Well, we've got obviously, you know, our one of our front page stories is on the second deer that's tested positive for chronic wasting disease, and that not a big surprise, obviously a disappointment, but you know, anybody that's following this or studying it or trying to, you know, see how widespread or if it is widespread, is not really surprised that they did find another deer. It was less than a mile away from where the initial deer was found, so now they're doing some genetic testing to see if they could possibly be related. The first deer that was found was a doe that was pregnant, so they're wondering if this deer, you know, may not be the father of those two or maybe an offspring from this doe from last year. So doing some more testing to find out if there's any connection. I guess if there's a good thing about this finding, it is that it was so close to the other one.
Sure.
You know, had they found it 10 miles away or 20 miles away or 50 miles away, then that would have been a whole other issue that maybe there's another, you know, hot spot somewhere that there might be another outbreak. So I guess silver lining that it was found close, but definitely a little bit of a disappointment that they did find another one.
No, it was a disappointment, and we had Chad Stewart from the Michigan DNR on in the first hour of the show. And of course, I threw the conspiracy theories at him that we've been getting on our Facebook page and the like, you know, about the DNR planning these deer and whatnot.
You know what?
You're going to get these things, Bill, and I'm sure as an outdoor rider, you're getting people asking you to investigate, well, you know, where are these deer really coming from? But you know what? The DNR is doing their job.
Absolutely.
They are also sending the samples out for testing, and these independent firms are confirming the fact that they are CWD. And what we were waiting for, like you said, the question we had asked Chad, could this be an offspring? Since the doe was 6 and this buck was 2, even though it had no signs of CWD, could this be an offspring of this deer? And now the question is going to be, if it is, how many more are out there that she may have put forth?
Right.
And you know, how prolific was she in breeding?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, the hope would be that if there were, they had already been removed and, you know, possibly, you know, hit by a car or taken by a hunter or something, but that they're not out on the landscape anymore. But, yeah, that remains to be seen. There's no way of telling that without continuing the testing and just trying to see how prevalent this disease is.
Absolutely. Bill Parker, Michigan Outdoor News, is our guest here. You can find it on your newsstands. New issue coming forth. Upholding our right to fish and hunt in Michigan. Wolves, you know, have been in the forefront. And what are the new findings? What do we got some new news coming our way and with the wolves.
Yes,
and
we
that
sure
issue.
Do. Another front page story on next week's edition, the Scientific Fish and Wildlife Conservation Act, which Citizens for Professional Wildlife Management went out and gathered all the signatures for last year, and we brought it to the legislature, and they passed a law that reaffirms the Natural Resources Commission's authority to use science to manage our fish and our wildlife. That was brought to a court. A lawsuit was filed by Keep Michigan Wolves Protected, the anti-hunting group that has been a thorn in the sides of all wolf management here in Michigan. But they appealed, or they filed a lawsuit, and it went to court, and the judge dismissed the suit and ruled in favor of conservation and the Scientific Fish and Wildlife Conservation Act and said it is not constitutionally wrong. That was the argument that Keep Michigan Wolves Protected put out there. So big win, in the courts. Sad that it has to go to that, and that, you know, game management is being debated in the court of law, but the courts did rule in favor of scientific game management, and they threw it out. There will probably be an appeal, so we probably haven't heard the last of it, but the judge ruled that it was not unconstitutional, that it was, in fact, a good law. It wasn't ruling on the merits of wolves or if they're, you know, threatened or endangered. That's a totally another issue. They were ruling specifically on the law itself and if it was constitutional, and it was constitutional. So that was a big win for scientific-based management here in Michigan.
You know, it's a big win for letter of the law as well. You know, and this is something that the you know, Keep Michigan Wolves Protected, headed up by Jill Fritz and her people. And I want to explain something to people that you may or may not know. She is also the Michigan head of the Humane Society of the United States. She is disguising herself as an organization to protect wolves, when in fact she was actually at our last interview. She may have changed title by now, but Humane Society of the United States, the top anti-hunting organization in the country, and they are hiding themselves again, playing on emotion. We have had her on the show. We took her apart. She had no answers. She's not contacted us again with anything else. So look, the phone lines are open. If Keep Michigan Wolves Protected would like to come on this show, I would love to have you. But bring science, keep your emotion at home.
Absolutely, and you're 100% right. They're just a shadow group for the Humane Society of the United States. They're the ones that back them. They're the ones that came up with most of the financing. This was clearly an anti-hunting proposal or action that was financed and supported and run by the Humane Society of the United States.
Yeah, it's something. Look, when it goes away, it gets out of the forefront. We lose track of what's going on. But places like the Michigan United Conservation Clubs that are continuously fighting for our rights to protect them, to hunt, fish, and trap in Michigan, it doesn't go away for them. It doesn't go away for Safari Club International, who are probably one of the bigger funding organizations of legalized, you know, to protect legal hunting and fishing and trapping within the country that nobody really knows about.
Yes, absolutely. You hit the nail on the head right there. And boy, we should do everything that we can to support these organizations and other organizations here in Michigan that are fighting for our, you know, our right to hunt and fish and to enjoy the outdoors.
Absolutely. Bill Parker is our guest here on Wild Michigan. We're going to talk more about something that probably is going under the radar as well. Bill, we talked about moose. We need to bring this up, so we'll bring it up in the next segment. So,
okay, sounds good.
Hang on here. We've got Bill Parker on the line. If you missed any of the first hour, we spoke with Chad Stewart from the Michigan DNR, talked about that second deer found with CWD here in Michigan. Also, we talked a little bit about the declining numbers of deer harvest in Michigan, some of the reasons behind that. Also spoke with David A. Rose, covering ICAST and some of the fishing here in Michigan. We're going to come back with Bill Parker, editor of Michigan Outdoor News, right here. This is Wild Michigan, wildmichiganradio.com. We'll be right back.
you can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I am Duran Martinez. Follow us on the intranet. WildMichiganRadio.com, Facebook.com/WildMichigan, or on the Twitter, @WildMichigan. Posted a picture on my Twitter. I tweeted it, I guess is how you say it, of me down in Florida with my Costa sunglasses on, and I posted, a pirate looks at 50. Kind of a take on the Jimmy Buffett thing. And it got favorited by Costa, so I feel like a rock star now that they actually noticed me. Aside from being a great sponsor of the show, in the Twitterverse, I am now noticed by Costa. Very happy about that. Bill Parker joins us right now, Michigan Outdoor News. He is the editor of. Bill, we had conversation earlier when we were setting up this interview, and you were talking about moose in Michigan. You know, that's one of those kind of things that it's kind of here. We have moose in certain parts of the UP or Isle Royale. But it may be a big deal here in the news before long.
Yes, like you said, we don't have a ton of moose here in Michigan, but we do have a population in the Upper Peninsula and a few out on Isle Royale. The last moose census that they did last year in Michigan, they physically counted 323, which was down a little bit from 2013 when they counted 450 or 451. But, you know, it's not an exact count, and they don't know if the population actually declined a little bit or maybe they just didn't see as many as they do. They're doing an aerial flyover and literally counting the number of moose that they see. And they, you know, it's all pretty much the same areas and the same protocol that they do each year, so there's some consistency to it. But we don't have a whole lot of moose. There was a question a few years ago if we would have a moose season, and the biologists determined that we didn't really have a sustainable population that would warrant a season yet. So that, you know, hasn't even really been of conversation very much here in Michigan. They do have had hunting seasons in Minnesota, but they canceled their season a couple of years ago as well because they were finding that the population was decreasing a little bit. Wisconsin also has a population similar to ours, and they do not hunt them in Wisconsin either. But that said, the Center for Biological Diversity and a group called Honor the Earth have joined together, and they petitioned the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to put moose on the endangered species list. And their claim is that it would, you know, do good for the moose. And they actually, some of their claims were that hunting has been part of the reason for the moose's decline, and we haven't even hunted them here or in Wisconsin. And they also said that logging practices have been detrimental to the moose population, when in fact logging is really good for moose because they need that early successional forest and the early growth to browse on. They're browsing beasts just like deer are, so they move around and they eat leaves and grasses and stuff like that. So old growth forests aren't conducive to good moose habitat.
Sure.
So some of the claims just kind of make you scratch your head a little bit and not really understand where they're coming from. The problem with this is that if they were put on the endangered species list, and if the population grew down the line and we had an opportunity to maybe have a very limited hunt here in Michigan, if they're on the endangered species list, obviously we couldn't do that. And we're seeing right now with wolves what happens once they get on that list and trying to remove them and actually have scientific-based management. It's not as easy as it should be. So a little bit concerned with what's going on with the moose, and the Fish and Wildlife Service has 90 days to respond to that and whether they'll take the petition up and move forward with it or dismiss it. Nobody really knows right now, but it's something that we're going to keep our eye on.
You know, and again, it doesn't seem like a whole lot of scientific. They are again, emotionally based, and they're not bringing any science to this. Look, they've attacked bear hunting in New Jersey. They've attacked hunting with dogs. They try and go, you know, they're going after this lead issue in California where they say it's killing condors, for God's sakes, because they'll eat some of the carrion left from shooting and whatnot, or they're saying it's hurting waterfowl. Look, what they are saying is so minimal And there's no proof. There's no proof that lead is killing condors.
Or that it's having a population issue at all. They may have, you know, have one issue here or one isolated event here. And that's exactly how these groups work. And like you said, they dial in on something like that, and they stir up a lot of emotion, and you know, they get people kind of off track of what the real bottom line basic elements are. Get everybody real emotionally wound up, just like they did with wolves, just like they did with doves, just like they did with bears here in Michigan.
Sure. And speaking with Bill Parker from Michigan Outdoor News, and I'm gonna throw myself under the bus with this as well, because of the internet, because of the fact that we're so quick to read a headline and not the story, we are losing ourselves. Look, Michigan Outdoor News, other papers in the state of that nature, are good quality reads. They have good writers that are doing research and putting things forward. I've gotten an argument and one evidently where all my comments were deleted and everything else, because there's a little site called the Boone County News in Kentucky that's trying to stir up headlines with a car accident. Now, mind you, I know this doesn't have anything to do with the outdoors, but I called them out on their sensational tactics for headlines, and a lot of people agreed with what was said, okay? And all of a sudden, all my comments, everything were deleted. They did not like how I called them out. And look, I work in the media industry where clicks are very important. They bring revenue. I don't care for it. I want honest reporting, and I want some accountability brought back into this industry. And if you know, when you can delete somebody that disagrees in a very proper manner, without name calling, with just bringing the facts, when you can delete that comment, it's not fair to the rest of the people.
No, absolutely not. And thanks for the kind words about Michigan Outdoor News, but you're absolutely right, Duran, with you know, the internet evolving into what it has evolved into, there are no checks and balances out there for a lot of the things that go on the internet. And somebody can just say, hey, I'm going to start a new website and call it All the Facts About Michigan Deer. Yeah. Put it out there, and I can put anything I want on that website. People are going to go there. People are going to see it, and they're going to eat it up. And there's no checks and balances. There's no, you know, verification of the facts or anything like that. So it's a little bit dangerous sometimes, you know, when there are so many different venues out there that can put anything they want. And then, like you said, if the webmaster doesn't like somebody that comes on and puts the truth on it, they just delete it.
Oh, no, and believe me, this Boone County News did not like what I said. They had brought sensationalism to an accident that killed five in Indiana, okay, in Tippecanoe County, Indiana. And the guy says, people should be outraged that people are dying in accidents. You know, that's clickbait. It's garbage reporting, and I don't know who the rookie was behind that. And I will call them out. Here on the show, again, we are trying to bring credibility to the outdoors, because there's so much misinformation in there, and that's why we bring our great guests here on the show, and that's why we encourage people to look at Woods and Water. We encourage people to look at Michigan Outdoor News, because we are all in this for the same reason, to help people get the information, the proper information, from the correct sources. And Bill Parker, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to go on a rant, but dude, I appreciate what you do at Michigan Outdoor News, and I appreciate your time today.
Well, thanks a million, Duran. Always a pleasure being on with you.
Not a problem, man. Check them out, Michigan Outdoor News. There'll be a new issue. We'll be on the stands next week, and find them in all the shows. They're always there. Thanks again, Bill Parker, Michigan Outdoor News. And find all of this information, like us or not, wildmichiganradio.com.
Hey, this is Mark Zona from Zona's Awesome Fishing Show, and you're listening to my guy, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
I'm on a first-name basis at the tackle shop. I got a charge account running up nonstop. They ought to give me my own parking spot.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan, Duran Martinez. All over the Great Lakes State, all over the world at wildmichiganradio.com, and a windy day on Saginaw Bay. But that's all right. That's not going to stop Captain Lance Valentine from Walleye 101. Out on the bay as we speak, one away from a limit, and maybe we'll hear the lines go off now. How you doing, Lance?
I'm doing good. We just had our player board go back, so I think we've got number 15 on our little offshore player board here coming in right now as we're talking. So.
Nice. Now, we did a little fishing with Michigan Out of Doors TV with some friends at Lucky Dog Charters early in the year. That's my only time out on the bay this year. But you've been on the bay a lot this year because that's what you do with Walleye 101. How's the fishing been? Because the weather's been kind of weird, but now it looks like we have a little bit of consistency coming up.
Yeah, it's been very, very good. It was very good in June, very good in early July. I had a little lull in the middle of July and made some adjustments to where we're fishing. Came into some shallow water, which traditionally late July, early August, we 40 back. We move into shallow water right now. We're catching fish in 9.5 feet of water, pulling crankbaits today, and have done done very well for about the last 7 or 8 trips or the last 2 weeks. We've done really well in this 9 to 11 foot of water, pulling crankbaits at 2.3, 2.4, and catching some nice fish. We got a bunch of fish today over 20 inches. So,
wow.
And those are like big fish, but for the way they say my bait in the last couple of years, it's actually pretty good.
Now, there's been some studies that they were looking at maybe changing some of the limits on Saginaw Bay, maybe increasing some of the limits. And that kind of concerns me, and especially if they wanted to lower the size. We've got some good year classes coming, but what's your take on that whole thing?
Well, you know, I'm not a trained biologist, you know, but I do spend a lot of time on the water and see a lot of things. You know, from previous talks, I'm a pretty meticulous record keeper and kind of, you know, keep track of things that are going on. You know, I'm catching, you know, we're getting, you know, between 10 and 20 fish, legal walleyes every day. We come out here most days, and I would tell you that I maybe catch one or two every day that are the fish that they want to let us keep next year, 13, 14 inches. Most of the shorts that I'm catching are, you know, 6, 7, 8 inches. We're catching very, very few 13, 14 inches. So I don't really know where that data came from. My issue, obviously, as a businessman, is two things. If I have 3 customers in my boat, that's 30 fish for a limit. The limit goes to 10, which is what they're talking about. And if I come out for 5 hours and catch 29 fish, the first thing that everybody's going to say is, you know, we're one short of a limit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not that we caught 29 fish in 5 hours, which is better fishing than anywhere else in the world, but we know we're one short of a limit. And the other issue that I have is if I do get 3 guys and we get on a good bite, and I'm catching a bunch of 18, 19, 20, 22, 23-inch fish, they're going to want to keep 30 of them. So does that regulation of trying to get some small fish out of the system actually backfire and start to take some of the legal fish that are here now, start to take more of those out of the system because we're trying to, you know, get a limit for our customers, which is their expectation?
Yeah, it really presents a lot of issues. I mean, like you said, it could possibly backfire, taking the bigger fish out that we're trying to establish in there. And Saginaw Bay, look, it's a phenomenal fishery, and we've been on this just wave of great fishing for a few years now. And I know it's kind of cyclical, but you've seen it more than I ever would have.
Right.
But, you know, it's almost like, where does this cycle end? And you don't want to damage what's such a good thing.
Right, and what I'm hearing is, you know, again, I don't have enough time to kind of stay up on all of this, but what I'm hearing is they're talking about changing the limit on walleye to help increase the perch population. And, you know, my response is, well, who are you talking to about the perch fishing? Because all the guys that I know who are good perch fishermen are still catching lots of perch and lots of big perch. It seems to be the people who go to the same spot they went to for the last 25 years with their grandpa,
mm-hmm.
The perch aren't there anymore, but the walleyes aren't in the same spot. The perch have changed. This body of water is a different water color than it used to be even 5 years ago.
Sure.
The water temperature is different. The weed growth is different. There's lots of things different, so you can't just keep going back to the same place you used to go 25 years, sit there on your bucket and say, come on, perch, and then say there's no perch in the system because the guys are actually fishing for perch, looking for perch, moving, following where the fish are going, because the changes are actually catching them. So I'm not so sure if the change is about increasing the perch population that, you know, increasing the walleye limit and keeping smaller walleyes is even the answer to that.
Speaking with Captain Lance Valentine from Walleye 101, a link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, will take you right to Lance in the Meet the Experts section of the website. Lance, let's talk about the fishing overall. You said you're using crankbaits right now. We were out using crawler harnesses. with shallower water, we're starting to see some warmer temps. That's going to warm up the water a little bit. How are we going to change the approach? Are we going to go to deeper water, or are we going to slow things down a little bit?
No, you know, we've been in here for, like I said, about 2 weeks now in the shallow water, and the Lowrance sonar unit is loaded with bait. We've got some good green weed growth. We're catching it both floating on the surface, and our lures are kind of getting every once in a while into a nice weed bed, and we're catching weeds. There's lots of bait. The fish are loaded with little, they look like either little shiners or little perch, you know, maybe 1.5, 2 inch long minnows. The fish are just loaded with them. So even though the water's getting a little bit warmer, remember, you know, walleyes or any game fish are always going to be close to their bait source. And right now, these weed beds are getting green. There's cover for the fish. More importantly, there's cover for the bait. So we see a influx of fish and a good shallow water bite late July, early August, all the way into sometimes early September. So just because the water seems a little too warm, the fish are going to be where the bait is. There's a ton of bait right now in shallow water.
No, and that's good, too. I mean, to know we've got that kind of bait, that kind of forage for the fish out there, and that you guys are catching them. That encourages people to get out, and that's what we want to do. We want to get people out fishing all over the place, but Saginaw Bay is what we're talking about right now. A little bit later on in the year, you are going to start heading down to Lake Erie for the big trophy hunt, and that's going to be a whole nother ball game come that time of year.
Yeah, you know, same thing in October, November, right? We're still looking for bait, but as the water gets a little bit colder, those bait actually start to shift to deeper water, out to basin areas where, you know, there isn't a lot of cover. They're just kind of out in the middle of the lake, and the walleyes do the same thing. So, you know, we're looking for fish in different areas, fishing big crankbaits and looking for fish that are a whole lot bigger. So, you know, once we leave here Saginaw Bay, we'll have had a good summer with, you know, smaller fish. There's fish right there. But, you know, getting to Erie is always a great... Nope, on the millboard. Getting to Erie is always a great time because, you know, we got a chance to catch some trophy fish.
Now, this I got to tell you this right now. I love the fact that in between sentences, no, that board. No, number two line. No. Okay, fish right there.
We got a little bit of a... A mess going here, so we got a good fish on here. So,
well, good. Don't let me keep you, man.
We had a good day. We found a nice little spot all by ourselves, and we've been doing pretty well. So I've got three guys on my charter, a couple of guys who have done it before, and one guy who's a rookie, and it's been fun watching them kind of, you know, do things pretty good with the last couple of fish. But I think we've got our I don't know if that was it. Looks like we got our last walleye on the line here. So we're having fun. We're having a good time. We got a nice mess of fish. Beautiful day. Enough wind to keep the bugs away, so we're really having a good time.
Sure. Now, you need a little bit of chop on the water, even though it may be bright out there. A little bit of chop out there really helps. And you know, and real quickly, Lance, explain why that chop and that wind is a good thing, aside from the bugs.
Well, you know, the biggest thing, it does a couple things, right? It creates a situation where, and I'm not too worried about, you know, it burns the walleye's eyes and does all that stuff, but what happens when we get some wind, especially in shallow water, is the wind creates a situation where all the bugs and all the vertebrates and all the stuff that's in the weed growth, the wind actually stirs that up. And what happens is bait fish that are living in shallow water, the perch, some of the small shiners, that's what they eat. So as the wind starts to blow and all of their food starts to get blown up, the bait fish in shallow water become more active, which means the walleyes become more active. It's a lot easier to hunt, and the actual shallow water fishing is actually pretty good in the summertime.
All right, Lance Valentine, walleye101.com is our guest. We'll be right back. Find out how big that fish was here on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up, turn the noise down, let this old world just spin around.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, Alex Clark, driving the ship. And you can find us at wildmichiganradio.com, brought to you by Costa Sunglasses. See what's out there. Had a great meeting with them down in Florida last week, and very happy to have them on board. And truly, one of my best friends on the water is a great quality pair of sunglasses like Costa. Now, we've got Lance Valentine. He is out on Saginaw Bay right now. And you've got a new guy. I want to talk about getting a new guy out on Saginaw Bay for the first time. We went out with Dave Chevalier and Rich Gulish a couple of weeks ago with Michigan Out of Doors TV, and they were both new guys to Saginaw Bay, and getting people on the bay for the first time, it's an experience like none other, because it's such a big body of water, but it's not real deep.
It's you know, basically, if you look at Saginaw Bay, if you look at a map of Saginaw Bay, and you just kind of, you know, change your mind for a minute and look at it like it's a, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 acre inland lake, it starts to make a lot more sense, right? We've got shallow weed beds, we've got some major structure, we've got some open water basins, we've got some rock humps, we've got a river or two that comes in. If you just stop and forget the immensity of Saginaw Bay and look at it like a 2,000 or 3,000 acre inland lake and fish it that way, you'll be successful most days. A lot of guys get overwhelmed by the size of the body of water and not realizing it's just your local lake on steroids is all it is. The same places that are holding fish now in your 400, 500, 600 acre inland lake are holding fish on big water also. So just look at a body of water about what it has and what it has to offer for the fish and what kind of bait fish are available. You can get on fish fairly quickly even on a big body of water if you've never been there before.
And you know, it's kind of surprising too, because when you get something on, and this is what I've noticed about the bay, when you get a walleye on, sometimes it feels like a really big fish, and here it is, it's 15.
Right. Well, you know, these fish are just, they're strong fish, right? There's lots of bait. These fish live an open water lifestyle for the most part. You know, they're moving, you know, over the course of several days. The wind will move them. Bait fish will move them. These are strong fish, especially as the summer goes on, right? They're feeding a lot. They've got a lot of food. They're pretty aggressive. They're feeding actively and aggressively. These fish aren't sissy fish. These fish can pull pretty good, even though 15, 16, 17 inches can give you a pretty good tussle.
Yeah, they can be. It's always fun. I don't care. You know, when you get a walleye, oh, that's a good fish. All of a sudden, wait a minute. It's like 14.
There you go.
But you know what?
Especially with crankbait, too, because sometimes, you know, they'll come up and they'll hit the front hook of a crankbait, and the next thing you know, that back hook kind of gets them on the side of the head. So now they're coming in, you know, sideways. And you know, any fish that comes in shaped like a U fights a whole lot harder than one that comes in straight. So sometimes that's a lot of situations too. Is they get one hook in their mouth, and then as they're fighting, they get a second hook from the bait somewhere else, and they don't come in straight. So obviously they feel a whole lot bigger when you're bringing them in.
No, it's a lot of fun. It's definitely a lot of fun speaking with Lance Valentine from Walleye 101 here on Wild Michigan. Lance, you got the angling challenge. That's been going on for a little while now. Tell us about that and tell us how it's going.
Well, it's going fairly well. Every tournament has gotten a little bit better. You know, we've got one this weekend, Sunday, up on Saginaw Bay. And what we did is we tried to figure out a way to get people who maybe wanted to be a little competitive with their fishing, guys who maybe wanted to see where they are as far as their fishing ability. You know, fish a tournament that doesn't going to cost a lot of money, doesn't have a lot of stress. You don't need to pre-fish for, you know, 10 days to feel like you can win. Something you can fish in a smaller boat, maybe fish with your kids as opposed to having a partner, limited pre-fishing time. So all those things what we wanted to do, and we created the angling challenge to kind of do that.
You know, I've always been curious about tournament fishing and the like, but some of it gets to be so serious, and that's so not me. You know me. That's not me. I'm serious to a degree, but when it comes to fishing, I want to have fun.
That's what we tried to do. Is we tried to put together something that allowed guys to only be able to, you know, pre-fish 1 or 2 days. Like I tell you here on Saginaw Bay, we put boundaries on it so you don't need a big boat. We opened up the Saginaw River. We're only going to go seven miles north of the river, and then basically from Linwood Beach on the west side over about 10 miles to the east. So we kind of limited where you can go. We opened up the river. We're just trying to make it friendly for guys who don't have 3 or 4 days to commit to free fishing. And you know, one of the things we did is we allowed 2, 3, or 4 members on the team, so you don't have to have just one guy to fish. You can fish each tournament. We're going to have five tournaments and championships this year. Each event, you can fish with different persons. You don't have the same teammate. So, hey, maybe one buddy can get one weekend off to fish with him. Next tournament, somebody else get a weekend off to fish with him. So we try to make it fun but add a little bit of competition. The competition helps you fish a little harder. And when you're competing against other guys, you get back together at the end of the day, and we've got our Walleye 101 atmosphere where we're going to teach, we're going to help each other. Everybody share information. So you were on the wire the same exact time, 10, 11, 12, fishing other boats. Maybe you missed something. You're going to hear from the other guys, but they did different than you to catch fish, and now you can actually have a learning experience from a day on the water because you're talking to other guys who are actually same conditions, same situation, and they did something different than you did.
And that's the one thing, too, that if you're not familiar about Lance Valentine or Walleye 101, it's, you know, like you say, learning, teaching, and finding more catchable fish. Look, you can sit in one spot with everybody else and be miserable and not catch anything. You went fishing. Okay, I didn't catch anything.
Yeah, great example. We're out here. We've been out here 6, 7, 8 charters last week and a half, and we're in a spot basically all by ourselves. The only person that's in here is another charter captain that I work with does a lot of work for us, Duncan Wooster, and he had a trip today, and we kind of tuned him into what's going on. We're the only two people here. So we've got this little stretch of water to ourselves. There's lots of places like this in the bay, so this is not the only shallow water spot that you can catch them. There's probably 20 spots like this. But, you know, we're kind of not in the pack. There's a pack north of us of probably 20, 25 boats. I talked to a couple guys who are in that pack, and, you know, they're struggling. They got 4, 5, 6 fish, and we're one short of a limit. So sometimes moving away, finding your own fish, and sometimes think outside the box. Hey, it's hot. It's sunny, the water's really warm, I need to go deep. Nah, be careful. Sometimes there's a lot of bait, a lot of cover, a lot of walleye in shallow water in the summertime.
No, a lot of things that are overlooked, you know, and this is what we have learned over the past 9 years of doing this show, is to take a broader approach to what you're doing while fishing, instead of, you know, going with Old Faithful or trying to do what you've always done, to think outside the box. And you have helped us learn that, you know, not staying with what everybody else is using because they're not catching anything either.
Right. You know, I've always said one thing, you know, I never say always or never when I talk about fishing because the fish will prove you wrong. But one thing I am 100% sure about when I talk about fishing, bad fishermen don't like to fish alone.
No.
That's why you get a pack on Saturday. You get 25 guys, nobody's catch anything. Here comes number 26. Well, we didn't catch anything, but we're all together, right? Or if you listen to your radio, yeah, we haven't marked a fish in an hour. Well, if you haven't marked a fish in this spot in an hour, you've been there 59 minutes too long. You know, using your sonar to find fish and then, you know, getting away from the pack. If you're in a pack of boats and you see 10, 15 boats and you're there for 10 minutes and nobody pops a net, it's time to get that boat on plane and go look for some fish.
You know, it is, and we see that. We talk about that in the spring with the Detroit River. My good friend Ron Spenchley is very good to take us out. He took myself and Sarah Marie out this spring. And, you know, there's that pack of boats all drifting next to each other, not catching anything. And we're an hour and a half into the trip. We're done. We're limited out. Why? Because we moved.
Well, the good thing about being in a group and not catching anything is you got time to talk. So I guess you can catch up on your social when you're on the water.
What's that you say? Misery loves company? And boy, there's a lot of it there.
Misery loves company. That's right. Bad fishermen don't like to be alone. That's something we know for sure.
Now, when are you going to open up the Walleye Education Center again there in Davison?
Well, you know, we decided to, you know, we originally had a storefront. We decided to close that up. It just got to be, you know, I just don't have the time to be in a situation like that. So we're still doing our mail order. We're really excited about some changes. Hopefully we can talk to you in January. We've got some really, really cool changes coming with our education and our seminars and our teaching for next year. So we are really, really excited about what's happening. Not having the store and having the education center, having a building to have to be at is really going to free us up to do some really cool things with our teaching. So we're pretty excited about what's coming next year.
Well, good deal. Lance Valentine, as always, I appreciate you, and I appreciate your time and your knowledge. Walleye101.com, find him, and I'll let you go get that last fish, man. Get out there on the bay and get it.
We're working on it.
All right. Lance Valentine, I guess. Thank you so much, man.
Thanks, man.
Fun show. Fun show went fast. Thanks to everybody. So good to be back from Florida. So good to be back to doing the show. Thanks to David A. Rose talking about ICAST. Chad Stewart from the Michigan DNR about that second deer with CWD. Bill Parker filling us in on what could possibly be coming our way with moose from Michigan Outdoor News. And, of course, Lance Valentine from Walleye 101. Make sure you hit us up on the website, wildmichiganradio.com, where you can find links to Costa, MUCC, Lucky Buck, and HHA Sports. This is Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez on the Wild Michigan Talk Network.